Dave Barno of American University, writing with his colleague Nora Bensahel in War on the Rocks, and the significance of female rangers. You write April 20th, yesterday, a turning point for U.S. Army women. What's the turning point that we're observing, Dave, and why is it important? Thanks for joining me today.
Well, Ranger School has been one of the most important and, for most people, the most demanding and toughest Army combat leadership school over the years, and been in existence since 1952, designed to prepare people over 8+ weeks of really arduous field conditions to get ready to go into combat and lead troops there in small infantry patrols. And since 1952, it's been all men for every single one of those classes. On Monday of this week, for the first time, we had 19 women begin the program. 16 of them are still in after the first day's assessments, doing better than the men in terms of the percentage that has survived the first few days. And that's a really big deal for the U.S. Army. It's the front end of this very tough decision coming up on allowing women to enter into all different parts of the ground combat arms.
You have a different perspective on this than most folks who might write about it, too, Dave, because you live this. Tell me about your experience around the Rangers and how that informs the way that you look at the idea of women taking on this challenge.
I went to Ranger School when I was 19 years old, which was young and dumb enough to be able to do it and get through it successfully, and then went on, unlike most people that go to Ranger School, I went on to serve 3 assignments in the 75th Ranger Regiment as a Ranger Company Commander in the invasion of Grenada, as a Ranger Battalion Ops Officer parachuting in at 500 feet for the invasion of Panama, and then later as a Ranger Battalion Commander. So I know this community really well. I know what it takes to be able to soldier in this community. And so the fact that women for the very first time are entering in this world, not to go to the Ranger Regiment yet, but to get out there and go to the school which, you know, qualifies you to wear the Army's, you know, very prized black and gold Ranger tab on your left shoulder for your whole career, that's a huge deal inside of a culture that's very focused on ground combat.
And that's what I wanted to focus on more than the actual arduous course that you outline in this piece, and I commend it to folks at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth. We have a link to your War in the Rocks piece with Nora Bensahel. But what does this signify for a culture that a lot of people have said has needed something like this for a long time, General?
Well, I think the most important thing to look at here is that the standards to be able to be an infantryman in the United States Army, to be a Ranger in the United States Army, are not going to change. You know, those standards are being looked at to make sure they're not simply some long-term rite of passage that dates to 1945 or something that's always been designed for men but doesn't connect to what you have to do to be a Ranger or be an infantryman in combat. You know, that needs to be looked at. But the standards are not going to be watered down. The standards for this particular Ranger course are exactly the same as for every previous Ranger course that only men have gone through. So the women, in order to get through the first day, had to do 49 push-ups, 59 sit-ups, 6 chin-ups, and run 5 miles in 40 minutes. And they've got more very tough tests coming up in the coming days. So this is a pretty big deal that this demonstrates that women can do these things. And it allows you to get the other 51% of the population, which comprise our women, into the fight, into, you know, getting all that capability, all that potential available to use in these units. Because there's some really, I mean, women have proven themselves already in Iraq and Afghanistan in combat. It's time to take a really hard look at what else they can be doing out there and bring that talent to bear.
The fact that men and women will be held to the same standard was important enough to you and Nora that you pointed it out a couple of times in this piece. Is it your sense that that's been the primary opposition, the primary point that people opposed to women being able to try this have used, Dave?
I think it is. I think that's the biggest issue. I mean, and that's objective. I mean, you can count how many push-ups, you can count how fast you run, you can determine, you know, how far you can march and how fast, carrying how much weight. It's a little more difficult to sort out, you know, some arguments against women in these organizations have been that it breaks down the cohesion between an all-male group, that when you have a small group of soldiers in a squad or maybe in a football team, that you need that all-male linkage to be able to have that group perform in combat. A lot of the studies have actually shown the opposite, that performance around a task focused on what the mission is creates cohesion, not the other way around. So that's something we pointed out in our piece as well.
The piece, as I mentioned, is linked at federalnewsradio.com/in-depth, but you and Nora write, completing Ranger School is about far more than superior physical fitness, and you detail the mental attributes and the character attributes that Ranger graduates contribute to not just the Ranger Corps, but to the entire Army and the entire military. Why is it important in your view that some of those are women?
Because that's half of our pool of talent. And as I pointed out in the column I had an experience as a Ranger company commander, listening to one of our officers brag about a young lieutenant coming in who was a real physical stud, and having one of our more senior officers say, I don't care if he's a stud or not, I want someone who's smart. And so having smart, capable leaders that have got tremendous endurance and stamina and have the personal character and what they call in the Army the intestinal fortitude, the guts to continue to move forward when every day it's getting tougher and tougher. That sometimes is a lot more about your inner character than it is about how many push-ups you can do or how many pounds you can carry in your rucksack. So we're Rangers and the entire Army as a whole, to include the infantry community, is looking for really smart, physically fit, capable people, not just, you know, NFL football players. You've got to be really, really smart to be able to be good at this business.
Lieutenant General Dave Barno, U.S. Army retired distinguished practitioner in residence at the School of International Service at American University. And Dave, that fits with a conversation that you and I have had on a number of occasions over the years, and that is what the various branches of the military, obviously you're biased toward the Army and rightfully so, but what the branches are doing to develop the next generation of leaders. And it's not just who's really good at putting the hurt on the enemy.
No, you've got to have a broad-based leader. And as you continue up in rank in the military, particularly for the officers, they've got to be able to have a very broad spectrum of thinking. And one of the best ways to do that is get out and stay in the military, but have the military send you to civilian graduate programs, which were probably 8 to 10 times more available when I was a young officer than they are today. They're to give you broadening assignments to go out and spend a tour in the State Department or spend a tour to U.S. Embassy, not just spend all your time in live fire ranges or in parachute jumps. It's really important to broaden the perspective of leaders as they go forward, because the problems they're going to face are going to be very complex. They're going to involve civilian populations and other cultures and other parts of the U.S. government that the being in the military snow globe, as I call it, sometimes doesn't prepare you particularly well for.
I don't remember Jackie Robinson, sir, but you write in this piece, the first women to earn Ranger tabs will effectively end the debate as to whether women have what it takes to lead combat units. When Mr. Robinson broke the color barrier in baseball, there was still a debate, even though he proved himself immediately as an excellent baseball player. Are you really that confident that that debate will be over, or is it possible that the first woman, or the first several women, or the first dozen women even, may be regarded as aberrations, as not the typical candidate, female candidate at least, to go to Ranger School, and it might take some time for the culture to absorb this change?
Well, I unquestionably, both Nora and I, think that the culture is going to take time to change. You don't change cultures overnight, and 1 or 5 or 25 women that are Ranger School graduates aren't going to change that culture. But the continuing influx of women to succeed at Ranger School and then go out and lead troops and do that successfully over time is going to build on some of the cultural change that's already happened with women serving in combat, you know, assignments and in combat exposure, combat experience in Afghanistan and Iraq over these last 15 years. The two of those together, I think, are going to have a very powerful effect on the Army's culture. But it's going to take time. There's no question about it.
A couple of places in this piece, you and Nora write about the fact that it may not be this class of Rangers that yields a female graduate. Is it more important that a female graduates at some point, or is it more important that females are participating, or does it not matter as long as progress is happening in this way?
I think it's important that women have the opportunity to attend Ranger School. And this is a one-time experimental class to assess the validity of the standards and other things, I think, for this particular group of women with no change to the standards whatsoever. I think it's extraordinarily important that Ranger School stay open to women, maybe not the next class, but as soon as possible thereafter, because women are already out there leading troops that are in firefights. They're already out there in, you know, combat experiences, still in Afghanistan, and is going to, I suspect, happen in Iraq. They need this high-quality training. This is the best combat training the Army provides to its leaders, and women need to have the opportunity to go do that, even if they're not today serving in infantry units.
So it doesn't matter then if they were to all wash out. And I'm not implying that they're not up to the task. It's obviously, as you detail in this piece, a tremendously, tremendously challenging task, and I'm still underselling it.
Yeah, I think we'll see what happens with this first class. There's only 19 women out of a starting group of about nearly 400 altogether. Well, that's a lower number than I would have liked to have seen start. So their percentages are going to be, you know, every one is going to have a big impact that falls out. And they've had 3 out of the 19 so far fall out on the first day for not making the physical standard, which is actually a better showing by 5 percentage points than their male counterparts. But I think it's important that they have the opportunity to continue to participate in these programs. You know, whether this class yields the first graduate or not, I don't think that's the really important point. The point is to learn from this and to make sure women have the opportunity to do this again in the future. And there'll be plenty of women out there. They're already queuing up at West Point among the Corps cadets up there, you know, ones that have come into an Army knowing that they're going to be able to do this when they graduate a couple years down the road. They're out there waiting. We just need to give them the opportunity.
General, I congratulate you and Nora on this piece on War on the Rocks, and I thank you very much for talking to me about it today.
Thanks, Francis. Great talking with you.